And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. In the Bible, there are many incredible stories, all truthful, mostly prophetic, about beasts. About beasts. That's B-E-A-S-T-S. You know, Satan, of course, is depicted as a beast. In Revelation, it says that Satan is the one whom we call that old serpent, the dragon. Now think about that. We know of Satan, and we picture him as some kind of an animal or beast or horrible being, a grotesque being who appears to us to be well clothed in red, or having red skin and having horns protruding out of his forehead and having a forked tail and being a hideous monster. Well, I'm not saying that Satan does not appear like that, but he started out as a beautiful creature. He started out as a lovely, a lovely being decorated with jewels, all kinds of precious stones. And these precious stones that Satan had from the beginning, now I'm telling you all about it because it's in the Word of God in the book of Ezekiel, that God created Satan, who was known as Lucifer, the famous archangel. He was God's choir master or music director in heaven. And God made him to be full of pipes and tabrets, in other words, musical instruments in his body. You know, some of us, not me unfortunately, but some of us are musical instruments. God has created some human beings, and we are given such beautiful, you know, people call them pipes. In other words, vocal cords. And we can sing any kind of music, any style, any tone, go up and down. And these people it's almost incredible. And you want to lean back in your chair and close your eyes and say, only God could have given a man or a woman such a great talent. Now, all of us, when we have talents, we would be better off, my friends, if we used those talents for God, for God's kingdom. That's why we're given everything we are. I may not have much of a body or may not be the best looking, but you know, the Bible is full of stories of people who had limitations. Moses and others. Some complained to God, I cannot be an evangelist. I cannot be a prophet because I don't have any comely appearance. That means a beautiful appearance. I'm just, you know, I'm plain. And it would be better if I, you know, was a great heroic man with rippling, I'm paraphrasing everything here, like Samson, a man of strength. People would look up to me. Paul talked about the affliction he had in the flesh. What was it? We don't know. Some disease, some terrible rash. Maybe it looked like leprosy. We don't know what he had, but he said, it's an affliction that I've got. And he prayed that God would take it away. You would think that God would take away an affliction, a horrible appearing affliction from one of his great apostles. Why? That would be so easy to do. But God said no to Paul. Why would God do that? Why would he allow Paul to continue with this physical horror, this affliction in his flesh? Well, Paul knew. He got the answer from God. God said, I want you to be weak so I can make you strong. Ah, yes. Counterintuitive, isn't it? He had to depend on God. And when you depend on God, you become strong, my friends. See, it's not that God cannot help you. He does not choose to help you. And then you have to lean on him. You cannot do it in your own mind. In your own mind, you can't with your own strength. So you have to cry out, Lord, I cannot move this great barrier, this stone that lies in front of me, this obstacle. Whatever the obstacle is, it could be the soldiers of Rome, the soldiers of the Soviet Union, could be the soldiers of Zionism. Whatever it is, you cannot move it yourself. But God can. You have to call on him. With a little effort of what we would metaphorically call a little finger, God could move the whole world. And sometimes he chooses to do so just for his pleasure. So you can see it as it moves. This gives you great faith, great confidence, great love of God. A thankfulness grows in your chest, in your very bosom, in your heart, my friends. I know sometimes I've been on trips and I've been sick, and I've had to go down and be on some TV show or go to some church group or something, and I just couldn't make it. And I was in my hotel room with Wanda, and I said, Wanda, I just can't make it. She said, but people have scheduled this. Some have driven hundreds of miles. And I said, I know, but, you know. And Wanda and I would pray. And it seemed like some kind of an inner strength gathered in me. I got up from the bed. I dressed. And by the time I was out the door toward my meeting place, I suddenly had strength. I was like 10 men. I couldn't understand it. I would go there then for the event. I would meet everybody. I would be like a dynamo of activity. And then when the event was over, I would just collapse. Just. But God saw me through. He knew my weakness. And as I get older, I depend on God more. And that's just the way God likes it. And that's just what makes me grow in knowledge and understanding because of him. Now, Satan, of course, was designed as a fantastic being. He made lovely music. He led the music. Can you believe what music there is in heaven? What glorious music. He led it all. And his body was made of musical instruments. They were actually embedded in his body. And it was also made of fantastic jewels and gems. Wow. What a lovely creature. What beauty was Lucifer. How great he was. But his pride got to him. He obviously said to himself, I am a lovely creature. I am the greatest of the creation. Why? Why, I'm greater than God. Why, I'm like the Most High. I'll make the Most High my residence. That'll be mine. Heaven will be mine. But also I'll bring earth in with it. I'm not overstating it at all. That's what Satan did. In Isaiah chapter 14, you will read of five positive confessions. Or statements, whatever you want to call them. We have so many books out there. So many books talking about positive statements, positive confessions. Say everything positive. Never say anything negative. You'll get everything. That's the secret. A best-selling book talked about a couple of years ago. The secret is to always convince yourself that you will get everything you want to achieve. You can change the world with your mind. Material things will change, will transform themselves for you. That is the secret of your mind. And of course, so many millions were led astray. Because the true secret of the Bible is, don't depend on your own mind. Don't waste your energy and time on your carnal imagination. but depend on God. The secret of the Bible is never fight the devil until you first got God on your side. Oh, yes. I very quickly added that, didn't I? Never fight the devil. He's stronger than you. He can send any one of his thousands of dark angels to you, and they'll destroy you, friend. They'll leave you moaning in agony. You'll be in torment. You'll lose everything. So many people I've seen over the years, people, brave people, bold people, hardy people, strong people, and they fought the devil and the devil won. I remember I had a young friend in high school, and I bought a new Bible, and I asked my friend Jerry, say just a few words in the Bible for me, you know, just write them in the front. A few words to you, maybe from God, to inspire me as I try my best to be a Christian. Well, Jerry Shirley was a wonderful young man of God. I love Jerry very much. He's a retired chaplain in the Navy today. And he wrote something similar to this. It said, I and God can do everything. Wow. I read that many times. I've never even told Jerry this. You and God can do everything. But without God, you're nothing. Jesus said that. Have no fear. That's one of Jesus' statements. Have no fear. He told his disciples. When he told them of what they could accomplish with faith, they were marveled and they said, oh my goodness. We can't do that. That's impossible. He said, with God, all things are possible. The Bible says, submit yourself therefore to God and then fight the devil. But first, submit yourself to God. Submit yourself. Bow down. Accept his majesty willingly, happily. Now, I want to tell you about this devil. This devil that's Satan and Lucifer. And he's called the serpent. And he appears in the very book of Genesis. And he deceives Adam and Eve as the serpent. He's worshipped as the serpent in the official religion of Judaism. And in the Old Testament, he's called Leviathan, the serpent. And they worship him as their Messiah. I'm not kidding you. I'm not, as they would say, pulling your leg. That's what the Jews do. That's in their Kabbalah, their holy book. Think about that. He's their Messiah. Leviathan. They also call him Behemoth, the great beast. Now, the Bible talks about him not only in Genesis, but in the book of Revelation, there are several pictures of this dragon, this beast, this horrible serpent. Think about Revelation 17. It says, so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast. There we have two creatures, don't we? We have a red beast, scarlet-colored, and a woman. Now the beast was full of names of blasphemy. He had seven heads and 10 horns. Wow. Now upon the forehead of the woman was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. She was the mother of all the harlots, all the whores on the planet. They weren't just sexual whores. They were deceptive liars and betrayers of God's truth. That's what made them really whores. And he calls them Mystery Babylon because the very font of evil came from ancient Babylon. That's Mystery Babylon, and it has existed throughout history. It exists today. And here we see that this woman, Mystery Babylon, rides the beast. She tells it where to go, what to do. until Revelation 17 says the beast turns on her. A lot of people forget that verse. There's all kinds of books out there about the woman, the seductive a woman having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And she's drunken with the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Even John in Revelation says, when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. He admired her. Not because she was so wicked. It was because she was wicked. You have to admire even wickedness sometime. You have to give the devil his due. You must admit he's strong. You must admit he's got a strategic plan. You must admit he's got thousands of other lower devils that believe in him, that he's got a great empire going for him, that he actually believes that he's going to succeed God, that he's got at least 12 million members of Freemasonry around this planet, that he's responsible for hundreds of millions that are involved in Islam and all kinds of false religions. This is a successful devil, successful beast. Yet he somehow succumbs, he gives up, he yields to the woman, the seductive woman with a cup in her right hand, and she's riding him. Now, I don't know much about how beast instincts are, likes or dislike, but I wouldn't think that any beast, whether it's a horse or an elephant or a donkey, really likes to be ridden. Now, I know the old cowboy says, oh, my horse likes me to ride him. I doubt that. They fight it, first of all. You have to break them, don't you? You have to go out there and break them. They don't want you on their backs. They don't want you to ride them. They don't want you to throw that leather saddle on. That's heavy. They'd rather it not be on them at all. They say that the elephant in the circus is very unhappy. Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey recently said that they're considering, maybe they've actually said it by now, they're going to stop displaying the great beast, the great elephant, at their circuses. Because they've had all kind of lawsuits against them and that they torment the elephants in their training and all. No, they don't want to do what they do. But you go to the circus and you say, oh, isn't that wonderful? Look at that elephant. Well, he can stand up on his hind legs. Look, he goes and gets food out of their hands. Isn't that wonderful? Well, no beast loves to be controlled, at first at least. Maybe he finally learns of his captivity, learns of its advantages, or just learns that if he doesn't yield to it, he'll be punished. Well, the captive of Satan is the same way. But Satan has so many advantages, the slave of Satan finally says, this is good. I like this. The flesh yields, and, well, finally he becomes one with his captor. He and the devil, or she and the devil, become one. And millions of hearts are lost this way. Well, it's interesting. In Revelation 18, it talks about this beast again. And it's a fabulous beast. But remember, the beast turns on the woman and destroys her. It eats her flesh with fire. Remember that. The beast turns on the woman. Now, I've been doing a lot of study about this beast. And I want to tell you a little bit what I've discovered about it. Now, first of all, we read in Revelation 18 that all the nations, all of them, have drunken of the wine of the wrath of the fornication of the woman who rides the beast. The kings of the earth have committed fornications with her. And the merchants, that's everybody that sells goods, makes money, the bankers, they've gotten rich through the abundance of her delicacies. She sells everything. She operates huge cargoes of ships across the world back and forth. Oh, she sells so many fine things, it says in Revelation 18. But one of the things she sells are the souls of men. The souls of men are sold. That's not talking about the slave. A slave may be sold, but he can still belong to God. Does that mean I recommend slavery? No, I don't. But around the world in the year 2015, there are slaves. There are slaves in Africa, many countries. There are slaves in the United States that think they're free. There's no greater slavery than for one to think he or she is free, but be captive to the devil. You might be a slave yourself, my friends. You may say, I'm free. I can go to houses of prostitution. I can be a prostitute. I can go to bars and drink all I want. I can lie to whoever I want. I can practice all of the demonic admonitions found in the Bible of Satan. And by the way, the Satanic Bible is a big bestseller. It is an eternal bestseller. Not eternal, I mean, as long as man is here, it probably will be. But it's going to have a cutoff date, I promise you that. Somebody told me that they wanted to find out all about the devil, so they went and bought the Satanic Bible, written by the high priest of the Church of Satan, Anton LaVey, a Jewish Satanist. Now, I got a copy of that many years ago, and I still have it. I read it because I want to know what the Satanists think, what they do. And, oh, they think they're so refined and so uppity. The poor souls, the pitiful souls. It is one of the best sellers. You can go check out the facts for yourself. Of course, LaVey, he's getting his just dues now. He has passed away. He died, I forget, I think it was in the 1980s. He passed away the very same day that Edmund A. Rothschild did. Rothschild and LaVey went to see their great master on the same day down in hell. You don't want to be a slave, friend. You don't want to be a slave. But LaVey in his Bible talks about being free. Liberate yourself. That's what Karl Marx talked about to all the Jews and all the peoples of the world. He said, you know, that his books, the philosophies in Karl Marx's books, would lead to your emancipation. He says the Jews around the world are already emancipated. Think about that. Karl Marx said they're already emancipated. I wrote about this in my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. What Marx really thought about Jews, he being a Jew himself, of course, and what he thought about money. And that's it. He said the Jews have their minds on money. Money is their master. A famous German philosopher named Heinrich Heine was a Jew himself. And back in the 19th century, he said, for the Jew, money is his God, and Rothschild is his prophet. That's what liberates you, to have money. The Jews don't need liberation. It's everybody else. And from what he saw, Karl Marx said he was very happy because he could see that the Christians were becoming like the Jews, because they had fastened on to money. Money had become their God also. Yes, they were becoming just like Jews. They were emancipating themselves. Goodness gracious. Most people can't see that. You can't see that you've been trapped in the money pit. You can't reach out of it. You can't grasp on the edge of it. It's slippery, and you fall back down again and again and again. Now, Jesus didn't have to worry about that. He said, the foxes have holes, but even the Son of Man doesn't have a place to lay his head. Some years ago, there were all of these Pentecostal so-called prophets and you know, Benny Hinn and Oral Roberts, and they were all running around teaching that Jesus was a very rich man. Why? Why? He had a robe on. And that robe was made of the finest material. They said it was like a $1,000 tailored suit. He even had servants that waited on him. My friend, he was the son of a carpenter. He was a poor man. That's why he was so despised. He went into the temple and he saw where the money men, what they were doing in the temple. They were selling trashy things just to make money off of people. He said, "This is my father's house, and you made it into a den of thieves." Don't grasp after money. If you do, then Satan will use the very thing you grasp for to capture you. Have you ever tried or attempted to catch a rat? Maybe you're sleeping at night and you heard a rat running up in your attic. You run up there and you see him running around there. You try to catch him and you run every which way and you never can catch the little rascal. What do? Well, then you get a trap and you get a piece of cheese. And he wants the cheese. So while you're sleeping, he'll try to get the cheese and he'll be caught and killed. That's how Satan does it. He knows what you like. He's had thousands of years to practice it on human beings. Now, I want to tell you about how Christians are captured by the Jews with this beast. And in fact, it's interesting, but the Jews claim that all Gentiles are beasts. We're what are called goy, G-O-Y, or G-O-Y-I-M, the plural. And all goyim, or all Gentiles, are worthless. They're like donkeys. They're like beasts. They're not good for anything. They don't have high souls at all. They really are not even the same species as a high-level genetic Jew. Now, of course, all this is total poppycock, total nonsense, but I'm just telling you what the Talmud, the highest book of the Jews, teaches. They've always had some fake book, fake teachings. And when Jesus came, the Jews didn't really preach from the Bible. Oh, it was around. They would read from it in their synagogues and all that. But they had the Talmud, the oral Talmud, meaning that's what they learned it by heart, by memory. Now, several hundred years after Jesus, though, the rabbis came together and they wrote it down. They said, "We need a written Talmud." They wrote it down. So today you have the written Talmud. And the Jews used the Talmud for their religion. This is the traditions of the elders, of the ancient elders of the Jewish tribe. Think about that. And Jesus recognized these traditions of the elders. He recognized them as tools of Satan. And he criticized them. But these tools, including not only the Talmud, but also a separate set of books of religion called the Kabbalah, or what the Jews use. And in the Kabbalah, there is a beast called a golem. Maybe that's a code word for America. We'll talk more about the golem, about America, about how the Jews use it, and how the rabbis say that they can actually create it out of magic. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power Prophecy. Stay with us. We've got a lot more when I return right here on Power of Prophecy. Hello again, friends. I'm Tex Mars. You know, one of the most favorite books I've ever written, I say favorite, it's because, you know, I enjoyed writing it and researching it, is a book entitled Codex Magica, The Magic Code, Codex Magica. The subtitle will give you really a guide to the book. Secret Signs, Mysterious Symbols, and Hidden Codes of the Illuminati. Now, this is just a magnificent book, and it's over 600 pages, big pages, too. Twice as big as, you know, a regular book. So that'd be equivalent to 1,200 pages. And it's got about, 1,000 pictures. I don't really count them. You can count them if you want to. But about 1,000 pictures and photographs and illustrations in the book. Many of them of a historical nature. And this will take you, for example, it explains all the Freemasonry symbols and handshakes and all that garbage all the way back. You'll even see the James brothers, Jesse and Frank James. Ah, they were Masons. You'll see Joseph Stalin, Vladimir Lenin. They were Masons. Well, you'll also see a strange creature, a beast, called the Golem. The Golem. Now, on the second half of this program, we'll talk more about the Golem of the Jews. The great beast that they say their rabbis can create. Can create. Now, this is, as I said, one of my favorite books because it has so much information and knowledge in it. And you'll find out, well, what the occultists really do. Their symbols, their rituals. This is the big book of magic. Now, on the very front cover of this book, there's a serpent. It's got three crowns on the top, an unholy trinity. A serpent. He's in the form of a circle. Some call him the Ouroboros. There he is. Oh, isn't he an ugly creature? He takes his tail and plunders it in his mouth, and he encircles the whole globe. This is Leviathan, Behemoth. This is the one the Jews worship as their Messiah. He's on the front cover of my book, Codex Magica. And I want you to have your own personal copy of Codex Magica. This is a best-selling book, and I believe it'll be around for many years. And in fact, it probably took me almost 20 years to put it all together. And now it's available for you. There's never been a book like Codex Magica. Never been. Now, I offer you this book for $35. As I told you, it's a huge, it's an encyclopedia. $35, add $5 shipping and handling. A total of $40. You can write to us at Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Or you can go to my website, TexMars.com, TexMars.com. That's TexMarrs.com. By the way, the same address or the same website can be obtained by going to PowerOfProphecy.com. PowerOfProphecy.com. Use your charge card right there on that website, and you can order all kinds, hundreds of videos and books and tapes that we offer. And we want you to have that, okay? Now, you can just phone us. 1-800. That's free call anywhere in the United States and Canada. 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. Order the book, Codex Magica. Now, I want to emphasize to the folks out there how much we appreciate those of you who give freely of donations, of your tithes, of your offerings. You know, we also operate Bible Home Church. Now, you can go and at any time listen to my weekly sermons. There is an archive of past sermons called BibleHomeChurch.org. BibleHomeChurch.org. Hope you'll join that, and I hope you'll give to our cause. Here at Power of Prophecy, we need your help. We've been around for, 27, 28 years now, I guess. 27, 28 years. You know, I sell you a valuable video or book every week when I have my radio program, but I don't really try to pound you or try to get you to give us, you know, donations. But I'm going to tell you right now, we do need your help. You know, a lot of people say, Well, why do you sell books? Why do you? Well, first of all, I want you to have the book. I spent 20 years developing this book. Why wouldn't I want you to have it? You say, well, send it to me free then. Well, goodness gracious. You know, it. Churches have buildings to take care of and pews and people's salaries to pay. And we've got a building, too, and we've got postage, and we've got to pay radio time. You know, that's the way the world works. And the Bible encourages a cheerful giver. It does. A cheerful giver. And I appreciate anyone who will give to this ministry. And I want you to know something. We're making a great impact. A great impact. Teaching people about the Word of God. Many times they discover things they've never heard about before. And they're so thrilled for the first time to hear them. And we're just as thrilled to pass them on. And this is the only program where you're going to, listen, we are patriotic Americans here. But we're most of all patriotic Christians. We stand for Christianity first. And America, well, that comes second. It comes second. But we do love America. And I suppose I need to tell you that I'm just a small town boy, small town American. I still hold everything I held as a young man. I'm talking about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all of our freedoms and liberties. I still do. I don't care that these corrupt courts have changed things or presidents lied to us. I still believe in George Washington, who told his officers and men how important it was not to use profanity. I don't use profanity, friends. I don't. I don't curse. I'm not after some woman somewhere. Well, I've got a great woman. She takes good care of me. It's my wife, Wanda. That's all I will ever need. And we have this ministry. Now, some people say, well, Tex, when are you going to retire? Well, I never heard of retirement before. What does that mean, retire? This isn't the kind of work people retire from. Why, a lot of people retire and become ministers. Well, I'm just getting started. You know, it's like John Paul Jones. I've only begun to fight. That's the way I feel, and I'm having victory after victory. So stay with us, friends. You got a winner here. We're going right on. I don't care what the rest of the world does. It can go for same-sex marriage and pornography and all this stuff and having a swinging wife and all this gunk. You're just going to get plain Tex Morris. Somebody said to me, you know, Tex, how could an educated man like you believe all that religious nonsense? Well, how can I not? How can I not believe in God? My good friend Edward Henry wrote a great book, Solving the Mystery of Babylon the Great. I'm talking about that today. You might want to order his book, too. $25 plus $5 shipping and handling. Solving the Mystery of Babylon the Great. Great book by Edward Henry. And in the book, he has so many. Well, if you got questions about Revelation 17 and 18, this is the book for you. Talks about the Catholic Church, Rome. Oh, my goodness, the woman, the beast. And Edward Henry is one of the most educated men in the world. He graduated from the University of Notre Dame. Then he went to Loyola Law School, became a great lawyer. And he's one of America's greatest constitutional attorneys. So what does he spend all his time doing? Writing Christian books. One of the most brilliant men in the world, Edward Henry. I love to talk to the man. I went to Washington, D.C. and had a conference there, and Edward and his lovely wife came and met Wanda and I. She's a beautiful lady, and Edward's a great man. I cannot imagine somebody going up to Edward. Now listen to this, Jerry, saying, why do you write these Christian books? You're such a brilliant man. Well, Edward, you ought to just take him, whack, slap him across. No, don't slap him across the head. Edward wouldn't do that at all. Maybe he would probably smile at him, smile big. He knows this is the greatest thing in the world, solving the mystery of Babylon the Great. I mean, God's made it a mystery, Babylon. And here he has a whole gigantic book solving it. What greater profession could you have? So anyway, that's what I offer you, friends. You stay with us here. You're going to get books like Codex Magica. You're going to get books like Solving the Mystery of Babylon the Great. But please, keep us in business. One of the ways to do it is through your insurance plan. You know, you just go out and buy insurance. When you buy insurance for your wife or your husband, it's needed. You buy an insurance plan. Hey, make us a beneficiary. Make us a beneficiary of your insurance plan. So when you die, you keep living. How's that again? When you die, you're going to be with Jesus, but you leave behind some of your estate in the form of a insurance beneficiary plan to this ministry. And what do with it? We just keep moving with it. We just keep growing. And we defeat the devil every day around here. Every day we smile. We defeat the devil. We're not some old defeated creature. We're not some poor beast servant. We're victors. We're God's children. We're winners. And you are too. All right, let's return to our regular program. You know, I like, that's the way I like it, Jerry. I like asking for money. I like it. Because God says, you know, that he also likes a cheerful giver. But you need to tell people what you're going to do with their money. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to expose the devil. I'm going to fight the devil. I'm going to exalt God, Jesus Christ. That's what I'm going to do. That's it. I've been audited by the IRS, visited by the FBI many years ago, of course. I think they gave up on me, you know. They just gave up on me. They were good guys. Well, some would say they weren't. But didn't bother me very much. We just went right on. And we've come out fine. All right. Now, it's interesting to me. In page 436 of my book, Codex Magica, I talk about a beast called the Golem. Now, the Jews say that this beast was created by Jewish magicians who work with Kabbalah formulas and rituals, which are basically witchcraft rituals. Now, they have a tale in the Kabbalah about the Golem. They say when Jews are jeopardized anywhere in the world, when Jews are persecuted, or when the Jews want to gain an advancement over the Gentiles, the rabbis conspire together in secret and create a golem. How do they do it? Well, it really is an inanimate man made of clay or dust, and they can make it to come alive, and it will turn into a huge and powerful monster or beast. It's sort of like the old TV show called The Incredible Hulk. Looks like a man, but he can transform himself into a horrible beast. Well, this horrible beast, this golem, will do the biddings of the rabbis. The rabbis act as magicians to create him. How do they do it? They have a language that, well, they use the letters of the Jewish alphabet and arrange them in a certain way, and they actually can place these letters. They put it on the forehead of this beast, and then they command him to go do their being. And he goes forth mainly to destroy. He's a great destroyer. Now, there was a movie called Der Golem, and a Rabbi Lowe of Prague, Czechoslovakia, was the chief rabbi who created this great golem beast. Now, the way he did this was to use the six-pointed star of David, the six-pointed star, which coded 666. It has six triangles. It has 6 points on the perimeter. And then within it is a six-pointed symbol. So 666. Now, this is how they create the golem. With the 666 symbol, the six-pointed star. But the golem himself wears around his neck or on upon his chest, he wears a five-pointed star. Now, what's the difference between a five-pointed star and a six-pointed star? Well, the six-pointed star denotes the Jews. The Jews are their own deities, they're their own gods. And their Talmud book says eventually they will become like gods on earth. They need no Messiah because they shall be their own Messiah. You see, they believe they're God men, and their rabbis are the lead God men. But they need this golem beast to help them. He will destroy their enemies. But if they don't watch it, he can turn around and destroy them. He can get it in his mind and heart that they need to be destroyed. And so they pull off the ritual letters on his forehead, and then he just falls like dust to the floor. So they can create the golem beast, or they can, you might say, extinguish his power, in which case he evaporates to dust. Why does he wear the five-pointed star? It's the highest number of man, 5 points. Oh, everybody has 5 points. I'm not going to get into all this. You can go into the occult world, and you know that the five-pointed star is the head symbol of the occult. The five-pointed star. The communist Jews, Lenin, Trotsky, with their associate, Dzerzhinsky, the head of the secret police, and of course, Stalin, all of them adopted the five-pointed star as the communist symbol. Think about that. The red star, the six-pointed star, five-pointed star, which we would call the pentagram, is the highest number to which a man can attain. Six-pointed star is the Jews collectively. But five-pointed star is for man, the symbol of man exalted. If you take the five-pointed star and point two stars going upward, ascendant, you have the horns of evil. The two horns. Draw a five-pointed star. With the 2 points up and the 3 below, you get the sign of evil. But turn the star around so that the 1 point is headed upward. And what do you have there? Well, you have the good magic, the positive magic. So this golem can be used for evil, but also for good, by the rabbis. Now, in 1921, there was a movie. It's still a classic movie. It was directed by a man named Paul Wegener. And it's just a classic. If you have a chance to see that movie, be sure to do it, because they show where they breathe life and breath into the artificial man or the golem and so forth. By the way, we offer a book by Michael Collins Piper, entitled The Golem, and he explains how the Jews intend to use this golem beast to do their bidding. Now, isn't it interesting that they have this golem? For the Jews, America is the golem. And for the Jews, their nuclear bombs are golems. You can use anything to be your beast, your slave beast. Think about that. I just said you can use anything to be your golem. Women can use their feminine wiles. They can use their beauty, their alluring charms. A man can use his strength, his techniques, his so-called mental strategies to allure others, to attract others. Over the years, of course, the Jews have used many golems. Ignacio de Loyola? Oh, yes. He worked for the Catholic Church, but he was a Jew. He was a member of the Jewish Illuminati called the Alumbrado. And he set up the Jesuit order. What is the Jesuit order? It's the order of Jesus. It's the Society of Jesus. But it was run and founded by a Jew. And what did this order do? Well, it became a deceptive order, a lying order. It spread around the world, spreading its activities. It overthrew nations. Revolution was what it stood for. It was the destructive arm of the Roman Catholic Church. It was the Jesuits. And it was founded by a Jew. Then, of course, when we had the communist world, you might say the golem, the beast, created by the Jews was Vladimir Lenin, Leon Trotsky, Joseph Stalin. These were like beasts, and they killed, they preyed on men, and 66 million perished. Oh, it was the golem, all right. It was the golem. Periodically, Satan comes out, and he takes many forms. I believe every one of these golems are actually Satan in another disguise. There's Baphomet, the great Luciferian goat god, worshipped first by the Knights Templar, but many Freemason sects worship him today. He's a graphic representation of the adversary, Satan himself. Here he's both male and female. He sits with one hand pointed up, one down, one toward heaven, one toward hell. He has a torch in his forehead. He has a satanic star, the five-pointed star, on his forehead. Incredible, isn't it? He has two balanced serpents in his genital area. He's malevolent, evil, Baphomet. I have a picture of him on page 102 of my book, Codex Magica. You'll see this beast in all kinds of representations in the field of Satanism, the beast. You'll find that Satan has always worshipped the horned god of the forest. For example, in Hyde Park in London, England, there's a sculpture, a statue of Pan with cloven hooves, horns, and beard, a representation of Satan. He's a golem also. It's just an astonishing thing. Yes, the Jews all use all of these things to great effect. And Lenin said, the greatest Russian is almost always a Jew or has Jewish blood in him. Really? He said, we're exterminating the bourgeoisie as a class. What was the bourgeoisie? Well, that was all the Gentiles. Did you know that the commandants of the Soviet Gulag concentration camps were almost all, to a man, they were all Jewish rabbis? What would a rabbi be interested in becoming the commandant? The commandant of a Gulag prison camp. So his demonic spirits, his golem spirits can come out. He can take Christians captive. He can become the conqueror and the assassinator of the Gentile. Incredible, isn't it? So much we have to learn. Now, the Jews today want to use America. America is a dumb beast doing the Jews' bidding in every area of the world. It's their golem. America's their golem. And they're riding us. They sit atop us. That's why these senators and Congressman John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, that's why they invited Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, a little bitty nation, a tiny nation of some 7.5 million people, one-third the size of Texas in people, not even that much in territory. It's like Vermont or Rhode Island almost. A little bitty state. Why did they invite him to address the Senate and House combined of the United States? Meddling around in American foreign affairs. They rule over us. The Jewish ADL, the AIPAC, all of these Jewish organizations, the neocons. They tell us where to go, what to do, whom to kill, and we have killed millions for the Jews. We are the golem. And we will spend billions to build a great embassy of the United States in Baghdad, a country of 23 million, of whom almost 1 million have been killed by the Americans and by ISIS, our friends. We founded ISIS, believe it. Yes, believe it. It's true. And we used it in the Middle East. ISIS will never attack Israel directly. If it does, it will be a show attack. Why wouldn't ISIS attack Israel right next door? Because we own ISIS, and we have paid thousands of mercenaries to go into and form up ISIS and kill other Muslims. Oh, there's a great conspiracy going on you don't know anything about, my friends. We're the golem. We're the golem. We're the beast. We're the Baphomet. We're the horned beast. And the goddess, mother earth, mystery, Babylon the Great, the whore with a golden cup in her right hand, full of the filth of her abominations, and she rules over us. And in their books, such as the Talmud, they write of what they're going to do to us. And they're already doing it with our own military and our own taxpayer dollars. It's amazing. We're the lone superpower of the world. Now we're telling Russia what to do. And it better do it or we can conquer it. We've conquered other nations. Sanhedrin, verse 90a in the Talmud says, those who read the Gospels, that's the Christian Bible, are doomed to hell. That's what the Jews are teaching. You're doomed to hell because you read the Gospels. In Shabbat 116a, the Talmud says the New Testament should be burned. Galatians explains why. Galatians chapter 4, verse 29, explains why they hate us so much. They've deceived us, and they use us, and they take Gentiles, and they put us into the form of a golem, a monster, and they tell us, go, eat flesh. Go forth, burn, eat, kill. And we do it. Paul says in Galatians, but as then, he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the Spirit. Even so it is now. Do you understand what that says? Galatians 4. But as then he that was born after the flesh, as a Jew, was born after the flesh, persecuted him that was born after the Spirit. Even so it is now. Who is born after the Spirit? That would be the disciples of Jesus Christ. You're born again in spirit and in truth. You're not part of the devil. You're not the beast that was released. You're not the great Leviathan. But the majority of Americans, you know they're not Christians. Look what they're doing in this world, my friends. We have a frenzied, hellish church, an establishment church, but there's a true church. There's the man and woman of God. They're the little people. They're the Tex Marses of this world. And you know you're part of that church system, that small church system. They want to persecute you. They hate you. They're born after the flesh. They don't know the things of the Spirit. They cannot receive them because they're only given by God, and God doesn't give them to anybody but his people, and he knows his sheep, and you're one of his sheep, and the rest of them, they don't know the combination of the gate. They can't get in. They're lost. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 says, for if he that cometh preacheth another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or if you receive another spirit which you have not received, or another gospel which you have not accepted, well, don't bear with him. Just don't pay any attention. Now, this golem, this beast, is going to gain great strength in the last days. Pray against him. Pray for the good things. Ask Jesus Christ to give you strength. He will. Even so much strength that we will fight and overcome the golem in the last days. The beast of Satan, the serpent, the dragon, the Baphomet. We shall overcome. For we're born again in spirit and in truth. And we live with Jesus Christ within our hearts. And we can never be defeated, ever, ever. Well, my friends, that's it for this week. My prayer is that you'll tune in each week during the same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.